couple of policy differences involved here, and of course the wisdom of this subcommittee, I'm sure, can sort out those differences and come up with the correct procedure, and sometimes that even includes a bit of compromise, which I recognize that of all the legislators that could be sitting on this subcommittee before me are three of the most compromising legislators that I've encountered in my career. I know that the problem when you start looking at a lot of these small special districts out there in these, these liens, encumbrances on property. I mean, they're in this office over here and office over there, and it's a haphazard filing. Maybe it's a file cabinet. Really, not a lot of order. And I think, Mr. Chair, you're being from that high-tech county of the state where they're producing all those computer chips. It's amazing what you can do with a computer nowadays. And I just think that this is probably one of the best bills that has been introduced this session for business. And I'd truly appreciate any time that you could spend in working out the mechanics of it, because there's already been hours and hours of work involved in it, and I hope that you'd just go that extra quarter mile and finish the race on this one so that we get a good work product out of this session.
Thank you, Representative Kopetsky. Questions?
There isn't anybody signed up in opposition to that.
Well, I hate to disappoint you, but there are a few people that have signed up against this bill.
They may change their minds.
Yes.
In order to represent Kopetsky, of course.
That impassioned testimony certainly swayed me. Counsel?
Sure, Mike. If my recollection is correct, this bill would state that all liens to take priority over bona fide purchases must be registered in one place?
That's correct.
And where would that place be?
Pardon?
Where would that place be?
My understanding at the county courthouse and the county, I think it's county court lien record. I don't have the bill before me. It's a month since I've looked at it.
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Okay. I thought we'd get into some real specifics with the proponent of the bill rather than Representative Kopetsky.
Okay, then I'll
Mr. Magnus is here, I think, yeah. And he can, he's got this thing memorized. He dreams about it.
Otherwise, I'd ask some provisional process questions about
sure.
Prejudgment attachment or things like that, but I'll let you off the hook this time.
I should say that if there is a fiscal impact, we would welcome this with open arms and somewhat of an open pocketbook down in Ways and Means Committee, at least I would.
Well, I'll tell Representative Gilmore that you have an open pocketbook in Ways and Means.
He's given me a little bit. It's about the size of a watch pocket.
Thanks, Mike.
We have a number of people signed up against it, but I, Michael Magnus, I believe, was the requester originally, so let's hear from him, and anybody else you wanted to bring up with you.
For the record, my name is Michael Magnus, and I'm Vice President and General Counsel of Oregon Tile Insurance Company. I'm also Assistant Secretary with the Oregon Land Tile Association. And I just have a couple of brief comments. I think I've already submitted one letter to Representative Springer about the bill, along with some section-by-section analysis, and as well as an excerpt from an article that was written by a professor of law at Hastings College of Law. The purposes of this bill is to provide for a single depository for all matters which are intended to affect an interest in real property in the county where the real property is located. In addition, the law will protect the interests of bona fide purchasers or encumbrances who record evidence of their interest first. The benefits of the bill are as follows. The bill simplifies the present system. A person searching the title to real property will only need to examine one public record and no other. Costs will ultimately be reduced in the conveyancing process. Costs of collection will be reduced. Creditors will be able to create liens against the real property of judgment debtors more quickly and efficiently. This will in turn protect bona fide purchasers or encumbrances who record first. The bill also promotes the stability of land titles. If B buys from A, B wants to know what A has to transfer and that the title of A is good. A single public depository preserves evidences of ownership and any other interests which affect that title. Finally, as our real estate market has increased in volume and complexity, the need for a single public depository has increased. If the system is inefficient, it produces a drain upon human energies and social resources. We are proposing a recording system which will promote the recording of all facts pertinent to ownership and proof of title in a single office, which will be easily accessible to any person searching the title to land. And I'm certainly available for any kinds of questions that...
Is there in our 36 counties a mechanism established for this single depository?
Sure. The county clerks, who are also here in support of this bill, have available deed, mortgages, and what is termed the county clerk lien record as the basis for accepting any types of documents which affect interest in and to real property. There are numerous bills presently before the legislature which are using the county clerk lien record, and in turn, for example, federal tax liens, if the Internal Revenue Service intends to create a lien against the real property of a debtor, they will record, and that federal tax lien will be filed in the county clerk lien record. And that's the already part of the present system. What we're proposing is that other interests that are presently found elsewhere in the system, either in the circuit courts, in the district courts, in the cities, docket books, that all of those matters be recorded in one solitary record. In addition, I should point out that the Department of Justice has got a bill before the legislature at this time whereby all of their levies and fines that are provided for in various statutes will be recorded in the county clerk lien record in order to create a lien in favor of the state of Oregon.
Questions?
Mr. Magnus, I guess I have several questions.
Sure.
Directing your attention to page 20. Lines 27 through 29, sections 11 and 12, I'm just wondering whether they relate, I hate to mention this again, but whether they're within the relating clause. This for liens the commission of the notary public $4 for issuance of license required by law other than marriage or liquor license and for which no fee is otherwise provided by law, $4. Do you know what those relate to? How they relate to real property?
This is, that part of the bill is in ORS 205320, and that's just the general enabling legislation for charges assessed by the county clerk. I think that the part that we're really, when it was reprinted, that we were more concerned about, for example, in lines 14, 15, and 16 for recording any instruments. So they just reprinted the entire statute.
Okay.
And I think we also have some amendments. I don't know if the committee has those amendments.
We don't.
Can I? I think that the clerks can speak more directly to the issues of the fees that they intend to assess for the various functions that they perform in connection with their obligations to provide it under state law. But they have requested that those fees be increased. And on my amendments, on the amendments on page 2, on lines 22 through 27, the fees for a number of the items set forth on page 20 would be increased from $4 to $5. And again, they can speak more directly to those issues than I can. I'm more concerned about the actual records as they pertain directly to the real property. And as I say, there's a number of these items that's, although they're they're just the general fees that are assessed by the clerks in connection with their obligations as found elsewhere, and they just reprinted the entire statute as opposed to simply the items that pertain directly to real estate.
One more? Okay.
Hate to be grilling you like this, but on page 4, section 4, line 18, talks about from entry of a judgment for a period of 10 years, 10 years from lapse. Does that mean from 10 years from when the judgment is entered or from 10 years from when it's filed?
Again, I must point out that that we discovered that there were certain problems with that section 4 with respect to the way it was drafted. And in the amendments that I just handed to you, on page 1, commencing on line 17 and running through line 6 on page 2, what we've done is we have changed the method in which we have allowed for the liens to be created. And the docket, if the docket stays, the docket will be a system whereby the judgment, in other words, the obligation, will last for 10 years. And then the lien, which is created by the recordation process, will last 10 years from the date of recordation. So there's actually two subsections now to Section 4 for amending ORS 18.360. In other words, there's as soon as the judgment's docketed, that creates a judgment, and that will last for a period of 10 years.
Yeah.
Right ahead.
Max, that would mean that it would be possible for me to get a judgment, fail to file it for 6 or 7 years, and then file it, and then that would be good 10 years from the date of when I file it.
The lien, yes, that's correct.
And if I were fortunate enough to have no intervening liens, and I would then get the advantage of 17 years.
As to the lien against the real property, you would get the advantage of 10 years. As to the judgment itself, you would get 10 years. I see them as two separate items. There's a case called Hansen versus Hansen where the Supreme Court in Oregon explained that difference. That one is the obvious. It's like, kind of like a note in a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's how we're splitting it up. The note is the obligation itself, and the mortgage is the lien.
Yeah, okay.
So that would mean that once the underlying judgment has expired, then the lien would no longer be valid?
Under the way that we've drafted it, the lien would continue. No, the lien would still be valid. It's the same thing. Well, another example. Under present law in the state of Oregon, you can be discharged in bankruptcy personally from your liability. So that if there was a judgment outstanding against you, you could be discharged in bankruptcy and you would have no longer personal liability for that judgment. But under current law, that lien of the judgment would continue as a lien against your real property, and a creditor could still look to your real property for purposes of satisfying their judgment. And that's current Oregon law and current bankruptcy law. And I think that this system merely continues that same idea. There's not really a difference between, there is, you know, that creditors still ought to be entitled to look to your real property for purposes of satisfying the lien and the obligation. And that's Oregon policy, and that's historic, and that's been in existence for many years. And I could certainly provide you with citations after this hearing for those cases.
Further questions?
Well, I guess maybe keen on a couple questions that were asked earlier, and I hope I'm not covering ground that was covered earlier when I had to step from the room, but what kind of problems, just briefly, I mean, are title companies getting sued? Are they being hung out to dry? Are they having to write more restrictive policies? In other words, how is this going to deliver benefit to the consumers? Are we going to understand that there's going to be a lower cost for title services? Is that something that we can reasonably anticipate? Is a consumer going to benefit from a more accurate search and a policy that will provide greater protection? Is there some kind of quid pro quo here? I mean, we understand that obviously the association supports this, I think, for reasons that you've explained, but are there other policy considerations that you would suggest to us that kind of approach this from the average citizen's point of view?
Well, for example, the average citizen, the average citizen is not required to buy title insurance. I would say that in the majority of real estate transactions, though, they do buy title insurance. We tend to be that little teeny cog in between lenders and consumers, and I think it's probably fairly evident that we do have a lot of involvement in the real estate, the average real estate transaction that takes place in the state. But certainly under this bill, this would be a situation where somebody could search their own real property if they chose not to get title insurance. I mean, so there's an election there. The present system as it stands now, it's enormously complicated. You have to go to circuit court records. You have to go to probate records. You have to go to the city's records. And so they have to go to a variety of records in order to search title to find out if there are any liens against real property. And they have to find out if there's any foreclosures pending. They have to find out if there's any divorces pending. Those kinds of things they can't do under the present system very easily, and probably don't have the knowledge or the information to do that. With this new system, they certainly could do a title search much more easily and readily by that basis. In terms of the lower cost to the consumer, I don't think that any of us are going to run out, given the fact that we've lost money all the way through 1985 in our business, and lower our rates. On the other hand, certainly we will be able to we'll be less likely to increase rates because our overhead expense will be reduced. Furthermore, the accessibility of city records at this point in time, there is a charge to the consumer ranging from anywhere from no dollars to about $15 a search that the city assesses independent of our title insurance fees. If these items are recorded, those would be incorporated as part of our title examination, and then we wouldn't have to assess that additional fee to the consumer in the process of searching those city records. So I guess to the extent that the system overall, and it will of course take time because this is a go-forward basis, but the system overall, there will be less cost to the consumer, both from the title insurance rate standpoint and then any other fees that they might be assessed in connection with the conveyancing process. And I have to say I truly believe that, notwithstanding the fact that I am in the title insurance business.
Just a follow-up quickly.
Okay.
Is this going to affect, aside from the physical functions, going out and checking and searching, is this going to affect the kind of plant that's maintained by title companies or the kind of self-generated recordings that I understand title companies themselves often maintain?
Our overhead expense with respect to our title plants would be reduced. No question about that. I mean, it won't entirely change the way we presently index things as opposed to the way the counties index items, but certainly we'll have an easier time of it than before. Now, in terms of loss experience, because I didn't answer your question earlier, the loss experience that we've had or evidenced or the kinds of lawsuits that we've become embroiled in as a result of access to records has been problematic. In turn, we can't provide as timely a service because there are certain records that are just not available to us in a very timely fashion. I mean, there's certain things that we just have difficulty getting into. The court systems are closed, you know, closed off to us in many respects, and there is a problem of accessibility. And I think that the circuit courts will strongly attest to the fact that they're probably understaffed, and it is difficult for them to sometimes serve and do all the things that they need to do. This way, we won't have to go look at their records so often because the matters pertaining to judgments and lawsuits will be on the public record. Those will be things that we automatically get on a daily basis. And so we won't have to be in their courts as often. I'm not saying that we will entirely be out of their court system, but certainly the likelihood of us being in there on a daily basis will be much reduced. And if it's much reduced, that means less employment expense, less personnel expenses, less expenses taking these things into account and doing what we call takeoffs and establishing our title plans. So overall, we would see a reduction in that respect.
Thank you.
Just if I can follow up on Representative Springer's questions, tell me what judgment creditor now couldn't get information on a defendant. You know, is the notice process now ineffective? What other information could you possibly need? It's obviously to make things easier for the title companies. You've stated that case pretty clear. But what information can't you get?
The consumer can't get or the creditor can't get?
The judgment creditor.
Well, the judgment creditor, once they docket their judgment at this point in time, that becomes a lien against the real... As long as it's... Let me go back a step. Under present law, only circuit court judgments that are duly docketed constitute liens against the real property of the judgment debtor. If I have a small claims judgment, a $1,000 judgment of that type, I have to go to the clerk's office and ask the clerk to transcribe for fee my judgment up to circuit court and then have that docketed. The same thing from district court to circuit court. Although there is a bill before the legislature right now that would cause district court judgments to become liens like circuit court judgments do, which, by the way, would probably increase our costs. So I'll just footnote that. But in that case, the judgment creditor automatically has his lien against those real property records. The judgment creditor needs absolutely nothing further in that respect. The problem arises not so much with the general judgment creditor, it arises with divorces are very problematic. Child support judgments, alimony support judgments, marital division awards, where there is some confusion sometimes about what kind of interest is being created. We had a case out of Lane County called Partlow versus Clark, where that became a very serious problem from the standpoint of the title insurance industry about what a divorce decree does in terms of constituting constructive notice to a bona fide purchaser. And in that respect, this bill would solve those kinds of problems where it would be abundantly clear on the face of the record that there was a lien against the real property and there wouldn't be any problems with delays in docketing. And I think Mr. Gutzer would like to talk briefly to that issue about a problem that he had here in Marion County with respect to the delays in docketing that would alleviate those problems. The creditor would be able to get his judgment lien on the record quicker than this present system provides for.
A couple of mechanical questions, but first want to follow up on that. Judgments in circuit court now, let's go back. A district court judgment can be transferred to circuit court. If this bill were enacted, would there be some additional recording required because of that move?
Well, instead, we eliminated the process of transcribing. Let's say I have a judgment in Multnomah County, whether it be district court or circuit court, and I want to create a lien against the real property of the defendant in Marion County. Under the present law, I would have to go to the court and ask them to transcribe it into Marion County, which would then be docketed in the Marion County records. Yeah, under our bill, as proposed, all that judgment debtor would have to do, as soon as the judge signed the judgment, he could immediately complete the lien record abstract form and mail that down to the county clerk and have that recorded. And that upon that instance, the judgment would become a lien against the real property. So in that respect, the judgment creditor could more efficiently and more quickly create liens out of the county where the judgment was not originally entered. They could go from county to county much more quickly and efficiently under our system than presently able to do.
Recording costs can be in a judgment.
We have provided in the bill that they would be a cost that you could add to your judgment, yes.
Would it be one fee for all counties? Each county has a different fee.
Additional fee, right? I don't want to mislead the committee, and the clerk certainly can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that if the way the amendments would work, that the fee would become standardized throughout the state at $5 a page, and there wouldn't be any kind of indexing fee or anything of that sort, because we're, under our proposed legislation, as enunciated in the amendments, we're repealing the part that provides for indexing. So it would just be one straight fee statewide.
That doesn't answer the question, though. This could result in a cost increase, and probably would. In fact, you've admitted that there are fee increases in part of the bill. But if you, in the judgment, have recordation fees or whatever that, what it's titled as, if it was, you could essentially add it up per county rather than just one fee.
Well, if you get a judgment in Multnomah County under our proposed legislation, in order to create the lien, you record it, and the charge would be $5 for that under the proposed legislation, because it's a one-page document, the lien record abstract. And then if you wanted to transcribe it, or if you wanted to record it in Washington County, that would be an additional $5 to create your lien. Now, under the present...
Each county would be an additional fee.
Yes, would be an additional fee under each county. If you wanted to transcribe from Multnomah to Washington County, you presently have to pay the circuit court a fee for that. And I don't know what that is, though.
Well, we've got plenty of people to testify, but I guess I've got one final question for you, unless others have questions. But you've used, as I've gone through, and haven't really had a chance to look at the amendments since you just dropped them on us today, but you used the words docketed and filed and eliminated the word recorded. Why? You know, what's the difference? How come you did that?
Which amendments are...
Well, no, I'm not talking about in the original bill. It seems that you've used words interchangeably you've eliminated, I believe, docketed and filed, if I remember my notes correctly, and
yes, that's
and
correct.
Put in recorded. Why'd you do that?
The term of art to describe what we're asking the legislature to do would be the use of the word recording. There's been numerous bills in both 85 and the 83 legislature where the use of the word filed has been somewhat confusing to clerks, and the clerks, again, can speak more clearly to this issue. Like statutory liens, it's always been filed, but the clerks have consistently recorded those numerous types of statutory liens. So they've tried over the course of time to change the term of art from file to record. And since we are trying to eliminate the docketing as a basis for creating a lien against real property and use of the word record, so that that's why we've deleted those words throughout our statute, is to just make it consistent so that the term of art is record, and that's the basis and the method that you'll use to create a lien against real property.
Okay. Other questions?
Sure, I have one question, Ms. Magus. In your policies, you often set forth disclaimers, am I correct? Disclaimers as to...
There are exceptions that we take to title, yes.
Exceptions to title. If this bill were to pass, then you would probably be issuing fewer exceptions?
No. This would not change the language of our policy at all, because the public record would still be the same. For example, if the cities are required to record city liens, we would show those as an exception to title, and that it would either be paid or not paid, depending on the nature of the transaction. Under our present system, we have to make an inquiry with the local city, and if the city does have a lien in its docket book, and they send us back a letter to that effect, then in that event, what we'll have to do is we'll have to show that we would still show that as a numbered exception, because it would still be an exception to title. We're talking about items that we would take exception for irrespective of whether they're docketed or in city docket books or in judgment docket books. We're going to still show them as exceptions to title because they would still be liens against title. We're just trying to put them all in one single depository, make the system simpler.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. I just would, you know, you're making the statutes, you're eliminating docketed and filed and put it in recorded, and your testimony, you use it interchangeably. So if you want the statutes to be, you're just thought I'd point that out. Okay, you have some testimony that you wanted to add?
My name is Wally Gutzler. I'm president of Capital Title Company here in Salem. I'm also the vice president of the Oregon Land Title Association. I'll try not to repeat anything that Mr. Magnus said. However, I would like to second everything he said. I think that it was generally clear. I think the confusion over the use of the word docketing and filing and recording is an attempt to try to relate the present law to what is being proposed in this bill, and it's a little difficult to go back and forth. We think the bill would make it simpler than it is now as a net result. I'd like to point out that we are regulated by both the real estate commissioner and the insurance commissioner, and when we talk about the benefits to the consumer, we cannot raise rates willy-nilly. Our title insurance rates are only raised after approval by the insurance commissioner, and that doesn't mean file and use. It means file and get approved and then use. And those rates are based upon our costs of doing business. So it's important to the consumer that our costs of doing business be kept down. It's not only important to us. I had a situation here in Maryland.